League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Garten, the righty, sets the 1-2. Swinging a soft ground ball up the middle, but it's going to get through the infield for a base hit. How about that? Maven in the score. The 2-0. Swinging a line drive in the center. That's going to drop for a base hit. Everybody move up 90 feet again.
How about this?
RBI single for Upton. Swinging a ground ball, and that'll get into center field. A base hit.
Kidding me?
Waving Castellanos home. Over to third goes Upton, and the Tigers are within one in the ninth with a potential tying run at third and one out. Soltalamacchia beats the shift. The 3-2 pitch. Inside, he walked him. We're tied at 7 and 5 run. Ninth inning for the Tigers. The 1-0. Swinging a fly ball, left center field, on the run, Dickerson, it's by him, and it's all the way to the gap in the deepest part of left center. Romine in, Iglesias in, Kinsler slides across the plate. It's a three-run double for Maven, and the Tigers have scored 8 in the ninth and lead it 10-7. There's a ground ball to third. Romine down to Kinsler, one. Relay to first, Tigers win.
What a great job, boys.
Part of this Blue Jays team earlier in the decade, and he just teed off. Deep left field, and the Indians will play from in front. Off the facing of the second deck. I mean, it's a nice streak, but when you most of the time only get one hit a game. There's a drive to deep right. Back is Carrera. He's out of room. It's out of here. The Indians lead it 2-0. Jason with home run number 11. Ground ball. Lindor scoops it up. Throws him out, and the Indians have equaled the longest win streak in franchise history with their 13th in a row.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, we roll onward, and apparently so do the Cleveland Indians. Welcome to this Friday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Nobody leads the Indians seemingly anymore, not even for an inning, let alone after nine. The franchise record tying 13th straight win last night. Now the Indians are actually playing, and if you are not following that, they are in the top of the seventh up in Toronto, where the Blue Jays just pushed one across in the bottom of the sixth inning to make that a 1-1 game. So they're even up in Toronto on Canada Day, looking for their 14th straight victory of this ridiculously, incredibly amazing stretch of baseball. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today, as we also talk about that the first set of highlights that you heard there, the Detroit Tigers pounding their way through the ninth inning with that eight-run ninth inning. What an unbelievable comeback. And the question is, and I just thought it was kind of interesting as I read coverage of this game on ESPN.com, this is one of those games where you have to ask yourself, did the Tigers win it in the ninth inning or did the Rays flat out blow it? Either it's a great comeback by one or a disastrous meltdown by the other. Maybe a little bit of room for both, but the Tigers staying warm. We won't say hot, but three straight wins, two over the Marlins and now over the Tampa Rays. They kind of own Florida apparently. So the Tigers staying right there. Kansas City staying right there with a win yesterday as well. They remain six back, so as hot as the Indians are looking for number 14, they are not really opening up any more ground between themselves and the Royals and the Tigers, at least right now. So that is where we are. We led with baseball only because, obviously, the Indians are playing right now and looking for a new franchise record 14th straight victory. But obviously, the big story of the day today, all around the world of sports, in Detroit, in Cleveland, right here in Toledo, dead center between the two, and all across the country, of course, is Free Agency Friday. Sometimes we call this Free For All Friday. Today we'll call it Free Agency Friday because it started literally at 12:01 a.m. The first name to move from one team to another wasn't Durant. It wasn't Horford. It wasn't Howard. It wasn't Conley. It wasn't Barnes. It wasn't one of the really highly recognizable star-type player names that you hear. The first name to move was Mozgov. Timofey or Timo Mozgov, the suddenly forgotten about backup front court player for the Cleveland Cavaliers, played such a huge role in the Cavs getting to the finals and into Game 6 in the 2014-15 season for the Cavaliers, became a forgotten man on the bench for Tyronn Lue, especially since Lue took over here in the 2015-16 season, departs Cleveland with his championship ring, and now joins the Los Angeles Lakers. How much do you pay for a guy who's seven? Here are the stats. 7 feet tall, 17 minutes per game, 6 points, and just under 4 rebounds. How much does that guy get? In today's NBA, he gets any daggone thing he wants, including 4 years at $64 million guaranteed dollars. That's an average, as I do my math of carry the one, times pi, square root. That's $16 million a year for a cat averaging about 6-4. Unbelievable. But that's the 2016 summer free agency signing period in a nutshell. When Timo Mozgov is in such demand that he can command 16 mil and a GM says, okay, deal. I mean, that's the kind of a demand an agent may have made that would make a general manager laugh himself to his grave. Literally, laugh so hard he couldn't stop himself and ends up having a heart attack and dying on the spot. Honestly, that's the kind of a deal that is. But instead, the Lakers go, okay, deal. 16 mil a year, Timo. Come on over. Never mind the fact that Luke Walton, the new head coach of the LA Lakers, comes from where? Where did he have his coaching experience? With the Golden State Warriors. What kind of a style do the Golden State Warriors play? Do they play a style where they need a big man on the court, like Timo Mozgov lumbering up one end from one end to the other, playing back to the basket, playing big-time interior defense? Do they play that kind of a game? No. No. Luke Walton, the head coach, new head coach of the Lakers, comes from a Warrior system in which it's run, 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 and get guys like Timo Mozgov off the floor. They get guys like Andrew Bogut, I mean, with the exception of a few moments, off the floor because they play a run, small, let's get up and down the floor type of style. Why would they strap Luke Walton with $16 million worth of Timofey Mozgov for the next 4 years? Just one of the many, many crazy questions that are going to be answered as Free Agency Friday continues and obviously through the weekend as Kevin Durant tries to pick his next home. So Bob France with you alongside Jim Cushlin as well, or Jim Cushlin is here alongside us, taking you through this Friday edition of the Extravaganza. We'll take you until 5 o'clock today. We're going to talk NBA with a couple of different things in mind. Sam Amico at 3:35 coming up here in about 20 minutes will join us to analyze not just that deal. That's just one of the, it's just kind of the poster child deal. Timofey Mozgov is the poster child for the NBA's spending excess, for the NBA's ridiculousness of riches. Because of the revenue generated by the new TV contract, teams have a floor that they have to meet, not just a salary cap ceiling, but a floor, and they've got to give money to guys who don't deserve money. And that includes Timofey Mozgov. So we're going to talk to Sam Amico about all things NBA. Then we're going to get more specific to the Pistons as David Mayo of MLive.com joins us at about 4:05 to talk about the max deal given to Mr. Andre Drummond, the NBA's leading rebounder. Talk a little bit about another signing. A backup point guard has been acquired for the Pistons. We'll talk about where they go from here or are they done. Just a really, really packed day of NBA conversation to have right here on the Extravaganza. Mr. Cushlin, your initial thoughts. Start with Timo Mozgov, 16 mil for, I think I had the numbers right, 17 minutes a game he averaged this year. 17 minutes and I want to say 6 points and just a hair under 4 rebounds a game for Mr. Mozgov. That gets you now a $64 million guaranteed contract.
Yeah, and obviously you said it correctly. It's kind of those poster, one of the poster child deals right now for what's going to happen over this NBA free agency period because of all the things we talked about these last couple days with teams having to hit the floor and the cap rate and all that other stuff. So this is kind of symbolic in terms of the money and the numbers and what you're getting for that in terms of what we're going to see in NBA free agency. As for the move specifically for the Lakers, and I'm kind of glad you actually mentioned Luke Walton there because, you know, he was with the Warriors, of course, and now he's the head coach down there with the Lakers. And, yes, this is a league that, as we know, is evolving into more small ball. And you mentioned some of these numbers. I almost wonder how much at times, though, Luke Walton, speaking from his experience with the Warriors, is thinking, well, there was that guy, Mozgov, what he did to us last year. And, yeah, that Warriors interior defense for about 2.5 games at the very end was non-existent without their rim-protecting big man there. Not that that was the only reason the Warriors blew that lead to the Cavs, but I wonder if that has something to do with it. Mozgov wanted a more expanded role, which he wasn't going to get here in Cleveland anymore. So that my thoughts on it is numbers don't surprise me. We knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, we knew it was going to happen, but you know, you look for some sense of sanity. You look for some sense of, yeah, I know there are going to be guys who get overpaid, but really, really though, $16 million. Now here's the bizarre part about it when we talk about sanity. The really bizarre part about this is a guy like Al Jefferson.
Right.
Al Jefferson in Indiana. Think about this for a minute now. Al Jefferson for Indiana, a much, much better player, a much more...
experienced player to boot.
An experienced player, absolutely. He's 12 years in. He averaged 12 points and 6.4 rebounds in 23 minutes for the Hornets. He earned $13.5 million in the last year of the contract he signed before the 2013 season. He averaged 13.3 points and 6 rebounds in 24 minutes per game in their first-round playoff loss to the Miami Heat. So the guy can contribute. Make no mistake, 13-6 in 23 minutes, a very valuable type of offensive, you know, burst guy that, you know, whether you bring him off the bench or what have you, he's certainly that kind of a guy. How does that guy go to Indiana on a three-year, $30 million deal? How is Timofey Mozgov in this summer of excess worth $16 million a year and Al Jefferson is worth $10 million a year? Somebody's going to have to explain that to me.
And I'm going to double-check the numbers, but one of the only explanations I could think of might be age. I mean, I know they're both over 30, I believe, but I believe Mozgov's a couple years younger. But outside of that, you got me.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the ones where we're in all of these, and he's 31, by the way. He's
okay.
Not 40. You know, he's 31 years old. He's not like he's done. I mean, LeBron is 31, for crying out loud. Not that you're comparing the skill set, but just in terms of the age, you know, and it's only a three-year deal, so he'll be 34 when this is over. At a time when what we're all doing is going, wait a second, what? How does that guy get that much money? That's been the question of the day. He got how much, or they paid how much for who? Phrase that question in whatever order you want, but that's kind of what everybody's asking about so many different deals.
Yeah, and it's
year,
a two-year age today. Difference. Mozgov will turn 30 here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so it's not even a two-year thing. I mean, if he's 30 in a couple of weeks, and Al Jefferson, as I just said, is 31, he's 31. He just turned 31 in January.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, whatever. But the point being, in all of these, oh, my gosh, they gave him how much? The one question we're asking the other way around is, wait a minute, Al Jefferson only got $10 million? That's just one of those little strange stories. Here's another one. Now, this one's obviously a much better-known player because he played in Chicago, obviously, and he's known for his brashness and his attitude and the fact that so many people hate him. A very good rebounder, obviously, and a very intense player and a good defender. But Joakim Noah going to the New York Knicks to play with Derrick Rose, for whom, of course, the Knicks traded, to play with Derrick Rose again, moving both of them from Chicago to New York. They're about to sign, according to Chris Broussard, well, they can't sign it, of course, until we know 7 days from now. But they're nearing a verbal agreement on a four-year deal worth $72 million. Now, again, look, I understand, as I said, there's a floor that teams have to meet, obviously, and I get why, you know, teams are overpaying in certain manners for certain guys. But a four-year, $72 million contract for Joakim Noah, that averages out to two more million per year than Mozgov for a guy whose numbers weren't all that much better over the last couple of years. Now, you say, wait a minute, don't compare Timofey Mozgov to Joakim Noah. Okay, because I'm not praising Timofey Mozgov, as you know. But if I'm going to condemn Mozgov and you know, 16 mil a year for a guy who averaged just over 6 points and 4.5 rebounds, well, then I'm going to condemn Joakim Noah for an $18 million deal for 4.3 points and 8.8 rebounds. I mean, what are we talking about here? And not only that, for a guy who missed a ton of time in the last two seasons.
You know what it also tells me? Because
Joakim Noah, hold on, Jim. Joakim Noah played, what, 29 games this year? He played 67 last year, so that means he missed, what, 15 games last year, and obviously about 55 or so this year. In those combined seasons, he averaged 7.2 last year and 4.3, so we'll push that out to, what, about 5.5 points a game.
Okay.
And rebounds last year, 9.6, this year, 8.8. So we'll average that at 9. So 5.5 points and 9 rebounds a game. Now get you, according to today's NBA salary structure and the New York Knicks, for whatever reason, it gets you $18 million a year. I'm sorry. Somebody's got to stop the madness. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, the other thing I guess to keep in mind is even though we're entering this supposed era of small ball, it still shows how much teams value a legit big guy like Noah, like Mozgov, like Drummond, who, as you mentioned, is going to end up signing a max. And there's some quirks to that, which we'll get into at the top of the next hour with David Mayo of M Live about. And there's, you could argue to a degree, there's a slight, you know, pull on big men right now to just get them in there, especially for teams that really don't have any. The Lakers have nobody like Mozgov on their roster right now. Of course, they have a ton of things they still have to do because that's just how far behind the Lakers are, and they have the cap space to do it. It doesn't make it right necessarily, but this is the world we live in as far as NBA contracts go.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, I mean, I don't know why this is bothering me at all because it shouldn't. We knew it was coming. You know, we knew with the contract, excuse me, with the cap expansion being what it is this year and what it will be next year, we knew that the contracts and the max contracts were going to go through the roof. And so it's not like I should be surprised by this, and I shouldn't be upset by this. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't get upset when Giancarlo Stanton got $325 million guaranteed dollars from the Marlins. I did. I mean, I got, again, upset meaning just, you know, as a sports fan going, I don't get all this. Just, I don't understand. I just, you know, we know they live in a different world than we do. We know they live in a different stratosphere. We know that they do things that we only dream about because they're just on a different planet almost. But still, we like to be able to make some sense of things when we talk about our sporting heroes, if you will, or the athletes that we root for on the teams sure. that we love, in the games that we love to watch, and that you and I talk about for a living. And I like it to at least make some sense. And when things stop making sense, that's when it starts to make me just a little bit like, I'm not okay with this.
And I suppose this is where I differ from you a little, because when things like this don't make sense to me, I try to laugh. And to that end, I submit to you the following two tweets that have gone out this morning early afternoon. First, Blake Griffin. The fact that nobody has legally changed their name to sources and taken credit for every breaking sports story on this stuff is insane. Good one, Blake Griffin. And I like this one for the Pistons, Tobias Harris on the Andre Drummond signing his max deal. Congrats to the bro, Andre Drummond. Dinner on you forever and ever.
And that's pretty good, and that's pretty accurate, too. Absolutely, it should be on him forever. My favorite one from earlier today, and where did I read this? It wasn't Rick Noland, I don't think, who joined us yesterday. Somebody tweeted this morning, and I'm going to be very, very upset with myself for forgetting who it was. But just since you brought up funny tweets, somebody this morning tweeted... you know who it was? I remember now. It was Vince Gillini, former Cleveland area sportscaster Vince Gelini went to CNN years ago. Now is at the Golf Channel. He's just been a lifer in sports. But Vince Gelini, let me see if I can find it real quick so I can quote him exactly from earlier this morning on the NBA. This was at about I'm going to find it. I'm going to stall until I do. I know we've got guests coming up here, but I'm going to stall until I find this. And I'm not able to find it, but it was just hilarious. Oh, here it is. There it is. I found it. It was 3 hours ago, not even this morning, Jim. It was about noontime. Just for fun, tweets Vince Gelini. Some guys agreeing to mega hashtag NBA free agency deals should have the money delivered in gold coins spilling out of a treasure chest. Just like the cartoon pictures that we have all seen when somebody strikes it rich, a treasure chest of gold coins, like the kind that pirates actually, I'm retweeting her. I already retweeted it. I take it back. I already did, but I'll retweet it again now. Kind of like what the pirates would always bury. This kind of treasure, this kind of money, somebody should say as a condition of my signing, you have to pay me in gold coins spilling out of a treasure chest. And I want video of me collecting my payment. That's what I think they ought to do.
Yeah, it's like old Krusty the Clown. Come on, it's not my fault. They drove a dump truck full of money up to my house. I'm only human.
That's it. Yes, that's a great reference for Simpsons fans out there. If you're a Simpsons fan, you remember that one. That is a great line. They drove a dump truck. Oh, you know what? He's not at the Golf Channel NBA anymore. My apologies, Vince. Vince is now NBA TV anchor guy. Vince has done it all in this business. Really one of the great guys. I've been a fan of his for a long time. I've had him on my shows. He's a great guy. I forgot he was over at NBA TV. He was at the Golf Channel for years. Anyway, that's where we are. And, Jim, I get it. It's a good way. It's a better way. It's better for your blood pressure.
You'll sleep better. You'll sleep better. Otherwise, you could just start looking at how the CBA and all this stuff works. But that your head will just explode. And you don't want that either.
No, you definitely do not. But you know, like I said, you know, it's a better way to do it to laugh at it. But for me, it's just I've got to call it out. Sometimes, I mean, that's what I do for a living. I guess I call out things that I find insane, whether it be in the world of sports or the world of news or politics or whatever. And I just find some of these absolutely insane.
Hey, I'm right there with you. You got to call it out too. But if I didn't laugh at it, then I'd just go nuts, and I don't need that.
But no, you don't. And I guess that's the difference between us, because I already went there. I went there years ago, and so it's too late now. There's no turning back. I'm just nuts, and that's it. So, you know, away we go. All right. I really don't. Like I said, I don't begrudge people making their money. I really don't. I get it. But there comes a point where I just think some sanity has to be expressed, and it just isn't in this case. When that cap went up, Jim, as big as it did, as high as it did, and we knew that LeBron, for example, only signed his 1 year last year because he was going to be able to max out at a bigger max this year than if he would have signed long-term last year. I get that. For those guys, for the money makers, for the, you know, bread and butter superstars of this league, whether it be a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant or the true league, you know, premier stars, fine, make what you make, because those guys literally generate, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for the league and for their franchises. And in LeBron's case, the biggest brands, maybe billions, what they generate through Nike and everything else and the deals that go off and the ancillary jobs that are created, et cetera. I'm okay with that. But when the Timo Mozgovs, he's not generating hundreds of millions for the league. When the Joakim Noahs, he's not generating hundreds of millions for the league. When these guys, when Harrison Barnes gets a max deal, he's not generating hundreds of millions of dollars for the league. When those guys start taking in that kind of money, I find myself, yeah, that's just about enough of this.
Well, then this should be the bad time. Mark Stein just reporting this one a few minutes ago. Let's see. Mirza Teletovic to Milwaukee on the same deal as Al Jefferson. 3 years, $30 million. I guess it should be noted he made 181 three-pointers off the bench for the Suns, which is the most ever by a bench player.
Wait, I missed
still,
it. Who is this?
Mirza Teletovic. He played for the Suns last year, made 181 threes off the bench, which is the most ever by a bench player in NBA history.
Yeah.
But he just got the same contract as Al Jefferson to go to Milwaukee, 3 years, $30 million. So sorry, I just had to lay more bad news based on what you're saying then.
Yeah, that is amazing. I mean, it really
is. That's Mark Stein from ESPN 10 minutes ago.
We've got tons of stuff to get into here. We're going to start it with our friend Sam Amico from Fox Sports Ohio and from AmicoHoops.net. We're going to talk to him about some of the late-breaking news. You know, DeMar DeRozan, there were a lot of rumors he might be a target of the Lakers. He's going to stay in Toronto. We know that. Nick Batum, a five-year, $120 million deal to stay with the Hornets. Jordan Clarkson stays with the Lakers. Hassan Whiteside says he's staying with the Heat, but it's just a matter of how much money he's going to get. They're going to max him out unless they can pull Durant. If they pull Durant, then Whiteside says he will take less in order to make that happen. Wade would probably do the same thing. We know about the Pistons and Andre Drummond. We're going to talk to David Mayo about that. Also, their acquisition of Ish Smith. If you don't know who Ish Smith is, do not fret. You are not alone. But he's now a three-year, $18 million contract holder with the Pistons, or at least he will be in 6 days. What else? DJ Augustine is staying with Orlando. So we've got a few other things to talk about. Jerry Lynn moving back to New York, but with a different franchise. Jeremy Lynn, Lynn Sanity continuing on. So we've got a lot more. We're going to get into all of it with Sam Amico here in a couple of minutes. Then we're going to talk with David Mayo, who covers the Pistons for MLive.com at the top of the hour at about 4:05. And anytime you want to get in and be a part of these conversations with our guests or without them, dial us up. We'll put you up and on the radio and talk about it together at 866-240-1065 on the ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the extravaganza rolls on right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. We are not the money leader, however. The money leader, well, I don't know. In terms of total contract dollars, we'll have to figure that out. But we know who... We know who's getting money for things that they have not yet done, and that's kind of been the focus of some of the early signings on this NBA Free Agency Friday. Some guys whose numbers don't bear any resemblance to the contracts that they are going to be able to call their own in 6 days when they're allowed to put their names on them, including former Cleveland Cavaliers center Timofey Mozgov, who is going to the Lakers for $16 million a year. Joakim Noah going to the Knicks for $18 million a year. And there is so much more to talk about. To do that, we want to bring in one of our favorite NBA analysts, really one of the best in the business. He was tremendous with us virtually throughout the entire playoff series, the playoff season, I should say, culminating in the Cavaliers World Championship. Sam Amico from Fox Sports Ohio, foxsportsohio.com, as well as AmicoHoops.net, joining us now for NBA free agency analysis. Hey, Sam, how are you, sir?
Bob, I'm doing well. Not as well as some of the free agents, but well nonetheless.
These guys, Sam, just before we talk about individual guys and where guys are going to end up and some of the deals that we've already heard agreed to today, Sam, just overall, we know that there's a ton more money to spend because of the NBA's television revenue being generated. It's through the roof. New contracts have expanded the salary caps. And with salary caps come salary floors. And everybody's got to spend at least a certain amount of money to be with the NBA's collective bargaining agreement. Compliance is exactly what I was looking for. I almost said compilation. Thank you, Jim Cushman. So they have to do this, and I get that. But is it not a system that's out of whack when they're being told you have to spend at least a certain amount of money, and in order to do so, they're given money like the $16 million to Timo that is just kind of the poster child for all this today thus far, $16 million for a guy who averaged 6 points and four rebounds last year. Isn't the system just a little out of whack, Sam Amico?
I think it's extremely out of whack right now. The money being thrown around is jaw-dropping, to be frank. It's absolute insanity that you had a lockout just a few years ago because you couldn't afford certain things, supposedly, if you're the owners. The lockouts are almost to keep them from hurting themselves. Now they come back and, as you said, give guys like Timo Mozgov, $16 million a year. To me, it's just utter insanity. And maybe you think, hey, you know what, this guy runs the floor pretty well. He's still only 28 years old. He might be a nice fit next to. And I think he will be a nice fit there with that team that's going to play, an up-tempo brand of basketball. with, you know, the likes of D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram and some of the Jordan Clarkson, some of those other guys. You know, but again, you're basing it on the fact that, yeah, we think he's going to fit. And if we don't, you know, look what's going to happen to the LA Lakers if he does not fit.
You know, that's a great point. And I talked about this somewhat earlier on with Jim. And you know, Luke Walton, of course, coaching under Steve Kerr in Golden State, they seem to go about their business trying to get big guys like Andrew Bogut off the floor more than trying to keep him on the floor because it just slowed their game down. These big seven-footers, they're just not kind of part of the equation unless somehow the game gets turned into a half-court kind of a game. I'm just wondering, how does Luke Walton, who learned, I don't want to say he learned to coach under Kerr, but, you know, who was obviously very successful there as an assistant and took over in the interim basis, it's a different kind of game. I can't imagine that Timo runs the floor that well that he's going to be, you know, be able to play in that type of Golden State offense or philosophy or style that I would imagine Luke is going to want to imitate in Los Angeles.
You're banking, if you're the Lakers, Luke Walton, you're banking on the idea that he can be your Andrew Bogut, okay? You're hoping that he can protect the rim and you know, get the offense started, get the offense flowing. He's not as good of a passer as Bogut, you know, and not even anywhere close. And really, you know, I think if you're the Lakers, you're going to be okay if he averages 6-7 points a game, as long as he protects the rim, but he didn't do that this year in Cleveland. So
right. You're
banking, you're paying this guy $16 million a year, banking on the idea of a comeback. And that to me, I mean, look, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, George Mikan, you know, I mean, he's making more than any of these guys, which to me is just, he might be making more than all four of them combined, you know, and to me it's just, you know, it's utter insanity that they felt the need to give him this much. They probably could have gotten him for, you know, $10 million a year. So to me, it's just like, I don't know, you know, you really handcuffed the franchise if you're the Lakers, when you signed Kobe to that huge deal just to reward him for being Kobe, not because he could produce anymore. And, you know, to me, the Lakers, quite honestly, Bob, they've turned into the new Clippers. They really have. What the Clippers were in the 80s and 90s, the Lakers seem like they are that today.
Yeah, I think that's true. And what's really crazy about it is, as you said, I'm sure he would have been just lucky to get a contract someplace based on, you know, the fact that he was a non-factor in Cleveland this year. Although he played when he was pressed last year and had to play as much as he did under David Blatt. He performed. I think he averaged almost 11 points and like 7 or 8 rebounds or 7.5. He can do some things and be a contributor, but just not a $16 million contributor. I would imagine he would have been happy to get a call anywhere, but for him to get that 1201 and be the first guy to be signed, and was there a rush on Timofey Mozgov that the Lakers were trying to beat before they lost out on this guy? Was there a bunch of other teams ready to throw 17 or, you know, $15 million at him that they had to go one bigger?
Well, you know, I can't answer that. I can't imagine that was the case other than the fact, you know, look, you probably could have used that money on other guys, you know, and so many free agents who are out there who could help you. To me, it was just insanity. You know, and I know he was meeting with several other teams, but, you know, none of those teams were going to give him that kind of money, I wouldn't think. So I don't know. You know, maybe they must feel like, you know, this guy is going to be such a good fit here and take off here and help us win so many games. You know, I can't come up with the reasoning. I can't wait for the press conference to hear Mitch Kupchak try to explain this because, to me, it's utter insanity.
Yeah, it really, really is. And I don't want to spend more time on Timofey than the Lakers are money, so let's move on. But it's just an example, like I said, kind of the poster child of some of the summer of excess that we are seeing start to play out today. Let's talk about some of the deals that have been made already and get your thoughts on them, Sam, and then talk about, of course, the big fish and where you think they're ultimately going to end up landing, especially Kevin Durant. But staying close to home here in Toledo, of course, a lot of Pistons fans very happy to find out that they're all NBA center. The NBA's leading rebounder, Andre Drummond, isn't going anywhere. A 5-year max deal in the $130 million range with a player option after the fourth year. Again, I would say in today's NBA parlance, if Timofey Mozgov can get $16 million, certainly Andre Drummond should get the max. But in reality, you know, guy has great rebounding totals, but if you can't keep a max player on the floor in the fourth quarter, or you know, or in crucial situations of games because he is such a liability at the free throw line, that sort of thing, is that kind of a contract a little crazy to you, or is this okay?
In comparison to the others and the other insanity, yeah, it's okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, he does so many things well, obviously. He completely, you know, Tristan Thompson, who's one of the great energy players in the NBA, was completely silenced in that series against the Pistons because of Drummond. You know, and Drummond just, you know, he does so many things well. And he's a cornerstone. So you
such
know,
a young guy, yeah, 22 years of age. He's, I mean, he's right. Still a couple of years away from his prime.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get better, I think. So, yeah, that makes sense. And if you're the Pistons, look at what you accomplished last year. He led you to things. You know, you made progress, you made steps, and he's a guy you want as your foundation. So, sure, you pay your foundation the max amount. And that's, yeah, granted, the free throws are troublesome. Sometimes, you know, if he gets matched up like he did against Kevin Love on a stretch four, he's really going to, you know, that's not his game, and the Cavs played that wisely. But, I mean, he's a guy who did everything. You know, he's very coachable. He's a smart player. And, you know, hey, look, he's big. And you know what? Stan Van Gundy is using that old Orlando Magic system with the Pistons and using his Drummond as his Dwight Howard. So, I think that that's okay, and you know, they should be on their way to some good things.
He is also very durable. He's, in the last 3 years, he's played 81, 82, and 81 games, and he's not a one-year fluke either with the numbers, you know, leading the NBA in rebounding this year, because the last 3 years, he's been a 13-13, a 13-13, and now a 16-14, barely under 15. Guy in terms of his stats, and like you said, that's only getting better. So yeah, comparatively, it's certainly worth a max contract for an Andre Drummond. I just have a hard time from a philosophical standpoint paying somebody maximum dollars, the same amount that you would pay a LeBron James, the same amount that you can pay Kevin Durant and the other max players in this league, for a guy that you kind of have to pull off the court when because of the free throw issue. You can't even take advantage of his multitude of talents because of that thing. By the way, Jim Cushman brought this up to me, Sam, the other day, and he didn't realize. I thought Jim maybe may have been joking about working with Rick Barry on the old underhanded granny-style free throw. Andre Drummond has actually stated that he is perfectly willing to discuss that, to learning that. He is not somebody who's just saying, who cares about the free throws? Look at everything else I do. He takes it seriously, takes it personally, 35%, he better. And he's willing to do that. Do you think we'll see a time when we get a guy going underhand again in the NBA?
Well, you know, in the age of Twitter, it should be fun if somebody does, because we'll have all the, you know, all the smart Alex will have a great time with it on Twitter. But you know what? If it works and it benefits you, then yeah. And that's the thing again about Andre, is he's got a reputation for being coachable. You know, for not acting like a guy who knows everything and you know, he's willing to listen. He appreciates Stan Van Gundy. And, frankly, I wouldn't be shocked if it had to come to that, which it might, that he would go that route.
Yeah, and you know what? Who cares if people are making fun? If he goes from 35% to 65% even, which still isn't good, but it's you keep him on the floor now. He'll have the last laugh, no matter what anybody on Twitter or anywhere else says.
Well, maybe he'll try left-handed like Tristan Thompson.
There you go. Just switch. Be ambidextrous. Let's talk about a couple of other names. And again, some of these guys are signed, some of them not yet. Kent Bazemore, of course, was supposed to be a priority for the Atlanta Hawks. They kind of are clearing room to make sure that they can try to keep both Horford and Kent Bazemore. He has met with the Rockets this morning, and according to an ESPN report, he is said to be seeking, by way of his agent, $19 to $20 million a season. This is a guy who averaged 11.6 and 5.1. I realize it's the summer of excess and everything we've said. I feel like we have to kind of couch every comment with this, but again, is that number too much, or is that about what a Kent Bazemore deserves to make in 2016?
It's too much. You know, I mean, even again, in this, market the way it is, it's too much. And to me, if I look at the Rockets, I'm like, well, where are you going to play him, and how often are you going to play him? And, you know, I know that they're changing things around there, and he's a pretty good defender. You know, I mean, let's not downplay that, the importance of that, especially in today's NBA where you need good wing defenders. He's one of the better ones. So, you know, I mean, that is an important skill, important characteristic that he'd bring to that team. That said, you just hired a coach who doesn't give a hoot about defense. So, to me, it's just you're paying so much on potential, you know, and what you feel like a guy brings. And look, they won the world championship. There's nothing wrong with that. The Cavaliers made that mistake with Iman Shumpert. You know, they paid him based on what they thought he was going to be able to continue to bring them and that he'd step up. Instead, he went in the other direction, and now they can't unload him fast enough. You know, so you run that risk. You really handcuff yourself by giving these guys some of these deals.
No question about it. Sam Amico is our guest. Sam is a tremendous NBA analyst and commentator for Fox Sports Ohio. He also does a wonderful website. It's AmicoHoops.net. And by the way, Sam, congratulations. Also a college basketball coach. I noted that in your one of your tweets about a week or so ago that you are now an assistant coach at Baldwin Wallace University out in Berea. So congratulations.
Well, thanks. I've always wanted to get into coaching, and obviously my job won't allow me to do it full time. But I'm going to make this as full time as possible, and I was thankful. You know, I actually talked to a number of schools, and this one just happened to be the best fit. You know, with Case Western, College of Worcester, both great programs, but it came down to location. You know, I mean, I live in Medina. Berea is between Medina and Cleveland. It just made best sense. So I'm really excited about it, excited to see where it leads.
Well, good for you. It's a great thing, and it's a great opportunity. And I know the kids that you're coaching are going to benefit from your vast wealth of knowledge of this game. Back to a few more names here, Sam, before we get to Kevin Durant. DeMar DeRozan looks like he's headed back to the Raptors, according to all signs. He is not going to apparently even visit with the Lakers. I know they were rumored to have been in the DeMar DeRozan business as recently as just a few days ago. Surprised by his quick re-signing with the Raptors or agreement to sign?
No, you know, I mean, again, there's a guy who's going to get more money from the Raptors and just a better situation for him. You know, then, you go to the Lakers. What are you going to do? You're going to battle for minutes and shots with D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson and some of those guys. Now, you know, I know Clarkson was a free agent too, but again, you're going to get lost in that shuffle a little bit more. Toronto, you're either 1 or 1A with Kyle Lowry. And, you can collect a bigger check. And DeRozan, again, is another guy, good guy, team-first guy, who he likes his situation there. So that make good sense to me.
Jeremy Lin cashes in again, 3 years, $36 million. He cashed in on Linsanity after that, obviously, very short run of incredible success he had with the Knicks. So he's going back to New York, but this time to Brooklyn. The contract doesn't look as crazy now because it comes in the context of all these other crazy salaries that we're talking about here. Jeremy Lin, about a $12 million a year player?
Bob, he's making a killing off one season. You know, now he did some nice things in Charlotte last year, but he was a perfect fit there, coming off the bench, playing against other teams' backups. I just think what you're doing is you're paying a guy who's a borderline reserve, that kind of money. It's obviously it's not as bad as some of the other deals. The Nets expect him to go, and you know what? He's an upgrade over Jarrett Jack. Jarrett Jack's breaking down,
indeed.
And he's a guy. He's making a killing off one season. You know what? More power to him. If you can do that, if you can, get by on one season, I almost think he was better last year in Charlotte than he's ever been. So
Deal. Yeah, I mean, he was better and more consistent, and that's probably why I got this deal. But again, $12 million, again, in the context of the Bazemore 19 or 20 or the Mozgov 16 or whatever, suddenly Lin's doesn't look insane. It doesn't look Lin-sane. Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal, Sam, 5 years, $130 million range, another guy. And I guess my problem with this is, again, Bradley Beal is now going to be paid in the same neighborhood as LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry when he gets his contract, et cetera, et cetera. He's not one of the best players in the league, but these guys, because of the way the NBA has done this, giving maxes to, you know, to guys who are not max quality players, it just, that's the way it turns out.
Well, another guy who, well, first of all, he can't stay on the floor. When he does, when he's on the floor, he's a pretty good shooter. I don't know what else he brings. Other than, you know, his ability to shoot. He can drive a little bit. A nice player who has still a huge upside if he can stay healthy. But, yeah, I mean, you know what, next to Mozgov, that was the biggest surprise to me, that they kind of rushed into that with him. You didn't want to lose him if you're the Wizards, but I don't think you wanted to keep him at all costs, and that's what they did. And to me, it's like, again, we're banking on the fact that this guy's finally going to stay healthy. And you know, going to help us win. There are times he got benched, you know, behind Garrett Temple. So, to me, it's, you know, it's part of the market. But, yeah, it's surprising that you look at LeBron James and Steph Curry and those guys, and Beal is not in their league.
Exactly. And that's what the NBA structure does, though, when they say you max out. Yeah, I want max. Okay, you get max. Well, so does that guy get max, and he's a ton better. And so you really don't have that separation. Couple more names just to throw it out there because they've been in the last 20 minutes. Chandler Parsons, a four-year deal with the Grizzlies worth about $95 million. Evan Turner and the Blazers, a four-year, $75 million deal. So he goes from Boston there. Let's see. And Evan Fournier and the Magic, a five-year, $85 million deal. All of these according to ESPN.com. And that brings us, of course, to the biggest fish, which we save for last, and that is Kevin Durant. Meeting with the Warriors for 3 hours today. He already talked to the Thunder. He'll talk to them first and last, if I understand it right, Sam. And in between,
yeah,
he's going to spend
right.
the weekend in Vegas talking to the Clippers a little bit. He's going to spend some time talking to the Celtics, a little bit of time talking to the Heat. I think it's scheduled to be on Sunday. What is your crystal ball telling you about what Kevin Durant does?
Well, I can't imagine what the Warriors' pitch is other than, you know, we were 73-9. And, you know, to me, it's, what they're really saying, or from Kevin Durant, what I'm thinking is, we had you guys on the ropes up 3-1, and now you're asking me to come here, take a third of the shots, and take less money. And we don't know that it's going to work. And also, you know, am I going to have to play power forward here, or is that going to be Draymond Green? You know, well, how's this going to work? Because I'm sharing the ball now with Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and you know, now I'm a piece, as opposed to, you know, one of two main guys who's making more money in Oklahoma City. I just think he's going back to the Thunder. I really do. And we saw ESPN reported yesterday, he's 90% sure, that was a quote, 90%, that he's going back to Oklahoma City. And now the Thunder made that trade, and if they can get Al Horford, which I think they're going to be able to do, you know, by clearing out some space, if you can move Cantor and you can bring in Horford, all of a sudden you have Horford, Durant, and Westbrook, and to me, that's a better lineup and a better team than you had last
season. Yeah,
but
if you only have it for a year, though, Sam, if you only have it for a year, is that something he's going to want to commit to? If he doesn't know that what Russell Westbrook next year is going to do the same thing, I can't imagine doing anything more than just the two-year deal right now with the one-year player option to get out again.
That's what he'll do, yeah. And, you know, you'll see how it works and see how it goes, but that's, to me, exactly what he's going to do, the LeBron James deal. 2 years with an option after one.
But as I understand it, Horford isn't going to be willing to sign with them if Durant isn't going to commit long term. Horford doesn't want to go there long term, have Durant show up, play a year, then Durant and Westbrook both bolt next year while he's locked in.
Well, you still have Ilyasova, who's going to be a good fit there. He's not Horford, but he'll be a good fit because he stretches the floor. He's a pain in the neck for opposing teams defensively, hustle player, and you got a nice young player in Sabonis, Arvydas Sabonis' son, rookie, is a very nice player and you know, very highly thought of. Now, you know, so obviously now you added Oladipo to that lineup as well. I think they improved that team by getting rid of Serge Ibaka, getting those young athletic guys in there. And you know, I think if you're Durant, who has praised that trade, I think that for me, you know, okay, yeah, we want Horford, but if we can't get Horford, then, you know, that's just the way it goes. We still got a good shot.
Sam, last thing, and I know we're late already, and I apologize to Jim Cushman. We were supposed to be out by 4, but I got to ask you about the possibility of Kevin Durant. And I know you said the 90%, you think he'll do that. But if he did want to leave, two other teams. The Clippers are going to press him with Paul, Jordan, and Griffin all joining Doc Rivers during their meeting, as it's understood. They want to create what they're going to call a big four. And there the shots are going to come a lot more readily for him, because Chris Paul isn't a shoot-first guy. He's a pass-first guy. I think Jordan, of course, gets his stuff down low on his own. Blake Griffin likes to shoot, no question about it, but I think even he would defer to Kevin Durant being the number one option. Your thoughts on them, and then obviously the last one being the Heat. Hassan Whiteside said he will take less than the max if it means getting Kevin Durant there, but he's going to re-sign. Dwayne Wade, I think, would do the same thing. He's at an impasse now, but if Durant is coming, Wade will do whatever he has to sign in order to rejoin that team.
The Clippers would be actually a good fit for him. You're right. You know, I think that, you know, you have Chris Paul, who is a pass-first kind of guy, and Blake Griffin, and he just fit in very well there. And they would be a force, and you could sell that. Now, obviously,
I think they'd be the favorite in the West. I mean, really, that group, yeah.
Absolutely. And then, my goodness, what would happen to the Thunder? But, you know, that's another story. But, you know, the Clippers, you could sell that. Everybody likes Doc Rivers. He's a good coach. You could really sell that. To me, it'd still be a surprise if he ended up going there, simply because of just the basic semantics of the whole thing, you know. And then, you know, Miami, Pat Riley's going to lay out his rings and do that whole shebang. But I just, you know, if you're Kevin Durant, do I want to go back to Miami with a maybe breaking down Dwayne Wade? Clearly, unfortunately, because of his medical situation, a broken down Chris Bosh.
Right.
I just don't see that being a great sell if you're the Heat. To me, the Heat may be past their days of bringing in these great free agents. I really, really think it's going to be between the Thunder and the Warriors. If the Warriors can actually make that work, I'm sure he's got that. You know, they've got him thinking. But I don't think. I just think he's going to look at it and say, you know what, we have them on the ropes. I want another shot at them, and you know what? I'm going to take more money to do it than I get there. So, you know, I mean, that's what it's going to boil down to.
Sam Amico, NBA analyst extraordinaire. Read him and follow his website, which is amicohoops.net. Also follow him on TV and on the web at Fox Sports Ohio. Sam, always great to talk to you. Thanks for the analysis, sir. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, Bob. Take care. Have a good fourth.
You do the same. Thank you so much. All right, let's get out now, get a Sports Center. We're going to talk Pistons basketball and a little more on Andre Drummond and more with David Mayo of MLive.com coming up.
Garten, the righty, sets the 1-2. Swing and a soft ground ball up the middle, but it's going to get through the infield for a base hit. How about that? Maven in the score. The 2-0. Swing a line drive in the center. That's going to drop for a base hit. Everybody move up 90 feet again.
How about this?
RBI single for Upton. Swinging a ground ball, and that'll get into center field. A base hit.
Kidding me.
Waving Castellanos home. Over to third goes Upton, and the Tigers are within one in the ninth with a potential tying win at third and one out. Soltalamacchia beats the shift. The 3-2 pitch. Inside. He walked him. We're tied at 7 and 5 run. Ninth inning for the Tigers. The 1-0. Swinging a fly ball left center field on the run. Dickerson. It's by him. And it's all the way to the gap in the deepest part of left center. Romine in. Iglesias in. Kinsler slides across the plate. It's a three-run double for Maven. And the Tigers have scored 8 in the ninth and lead it 10-7. There's a ground ball to third. Romine down to Kinsler, one. Relay to first. Tigers win.
What a great job, boys.
He was part of this Blue Jays team earlier in the decade, and he just teed off. Deep left field, and the Indians will play from in front. Off the facing of the second deck.
I mean, it's a nice streak, but you most of the time only get one hit a game.
There's a drive to deep right. Back is Carrera. He's out of room. It's out of here. The Indians lead it 2-0. Jason with home run number 11.
Ground ball.
Yes. Lindor scoops it up. Throws him out, and the Indians have equaled the longest win streak in franchise history with their 13th in a row.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, they're still playing baseball on Canada Day up in Canada. Jim Cushing, you sent me a message early this afternoon because of the wild first inning fireworks on Canada Day in Canada, but not good for the Canadians.
Yeah, it was a crazy first inning. So Josh Tomlin ends up dealing, but nobody on Toronto likes the calls. Edwin Encarnacion strikes out to end the inning, complains, bumps the ump. He gets tossed, so Gibbons then gets tossed, and all that happens in the first inning. And we got a nail biter. It's 1-1 going to the bottom of the 10th now, with the streak still trying to go to 14 for a new record.
You know, it's fine to call it a nail biter, but to me, I'm not going to call it that. What I'm going to call it is yet another dominant pitching performance by an Indian starter.
No doubt.
It's 1-1 in the 10th inning. I mean, honestly, it's every day it's like the next ace walks to the mound.
Yeah, in this case it was Tomlin. He gave up a solo homer in the 6th, but that was it. 7 total hits, 8 strikeouts in 6 innings for Josh Tomlin. And you don't think of him
walks. Yeah, and just 2 walks against those 8 strikeouts, and that's following up Carrasco,
right,
who struck out 14 last night with just 2 walks and a dominating performance, which followed up Danny Salazar in a dominating performance, which followed up Corey Kluber with a, 8-inning, 3-hit dominating performance, and Trevor Bauer. I mean, I'm not joking. They're all just freaking, you know, it's like there's something in the water. There's a machine. I don't know what it is, but they're just carbon copying dominant start after dominant start, which has led them to this 13-game winning streak and a 14-gamer on the line right now. They are, again, in the 10th inning. Are we in the top? No, we're in the bottom. We're
bottom,
in the
bottom half. Right now. Brian Shaw is just coming out for the Indians.
Which may or may not be a very good thing.
I was just thinking that.
He has not been dominant.
No, he has not.
He has not been dominant. So we'll see if they can extend it to a franchise record 14 straight wins. So there's your little baseball break, and obviously some fun in the comeback, the rally last night by the Tigers as well over the Rays. So that's our little baseball break, interrupting our ongoing NBA Free Agency Friday conversation. Great stuff from Sam Amico from Fox Sports Ohio. Talking NBA free agency everywhere. We want to kind of narrow that down a little bit with our next guest and talk about the Detroit Pistons and the moves that were made today. And to do that, we welcome back David Mayo to our program. David Mayo does a tremendous job writing and covering the Detroit Pistons for MLive.com. He is on their beat, and he's now on our air on ESPN 106.5, the ticket. And Mr. Mayo, what an unbelievable summer of riches that has begun for NBA free agents today. It's quite amazing and astounding, is it not?
Well, and the other shoe hasn't really started to drop yet. I think when Durant makes up his mind, it'll set up a chain reaction on some of these other guys too. So it's been interesting so far. Certainly, I'm sure in your market, interesting what's happened with Cleveland and in Detroit. I think they believe they got a backup point guard who's serviceable, and of course they took care of Andre Drummond, which we all knew was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, we'll get to Ish in a moment, and let's get to Andre Drummond now, and not just Drummond, although we certainly want to sing his praises. I talked to him to Sam Amico a little bit about him a few minutes ago, David, and you know, he certainly is a tremendous basketball player. He's 22 years old, so he's not even entering his prime yet, and his last 3 years, incredibly durable. He's played 81 games or 82 in all 3 of the years. And looking at the numbers, just straight double-doubles, 13-13, 13-13 in this past year, 16 and nearly 15 rebounds a game. So no disrespect whatsoever, as I will continue to sing his praises. But I want to ask you just about the NBA system, where a guy like Andre is a max guy, where a guy like Hassan Whiteside is going to be a max guy, where a guy like Harrison Barnes is going to be a max guy. How can we make everybody max guys when the max dollars are going to be the same as LeBron James, as Kevin Durant, as Steph Curry when he's up? You know what I'm saying? I mean, these guys are not all the same player, but they're all going to make the same amount of money.
It's because of it's just the way the system is set up with the percentages that there are max contracts. I mean, Stan Van Gundy got in a little trouble here last year for suggesting that the NBA should do away with max contracts for just the reason you cited. I mean, it narrows the number of teams that legitimately can bid on a guy. What would LeBron James, what would his actual percentage of a team's cap be if he signed with it? I mean, realistically, he's worth more to a team than the salary cap.
I mean, no question.
He's worth more to the Cleveland Cavaliers than $94 million next year. That's all there is to it. So So, I mean, he advocated for doing away with it entirely, letting a team throw 50% or 60% of its cap at someone like LeBron if it wanted. But that's not the way it's
set up.
What
do you mean when you say he got David, what did you mean when you say he got in a little trouble for suggesting that?
Well, that's not the way the CBA is set up. I think he got a little slap on the wrist from the league for it. It wasn't like he got fined or anything, but you know, that's not the way the collective bargaining agreement between the union and the owners is set up. So as long as it's on a percentage basis, you're going to see guys cashing in contracts that seem out of sorts relative to what the stars are getting. And in fact, I mean, Stephen Curry's going to make $12 million next year.
Right.
That's all you have to know, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, think about it that way. And now, and again, I don't begrudge, you know, LeBron James is going to generate how many hundreds of millions of dollars for the NBA,
right,
if not billions, certainly $1 billion over the course of a deal, but who knows, maybe even per season, hundreds of millions of dollars for the league, for its properties, et cetera. So will Kevin Durant. So will guys like that. I guess for them, there shouldn't be a max rule. There shouldn't be, you know, their earning potential should be something at least commensurate with their revenue generation for their teams and for the league. And that isn't something that an Andre Drummond can do, that a Barnes or any of these other quote-unquote max guys can do.
Yeah. You know, what you run into on that is just the union has to make these decisions. And when you get into those union meetings, there's a lot more mid-level guys than there are max guys voting on this. So
that's a great point.
They do set it up where the money is spread out more, because these guys would be completely getting shut out if it were a complete meritocracy. So that's what happens is the mid-level guys in the union want to get theirs too, and that's why the contract, frankly, is structured the way it is.
That's a great point. David Mayo is our guest, MLive.com. He covers the Pistons beat. We'll talk a little more about Drummond, but Jim Cushlin's got a question as well. Go ahead, Jim.
And you know, David, talking about playing within the system and how the CBA and everything is work, this is why we're talking about this max kind of thing. But on the flip side of this, if I'm reading what I read or from some sources earlier today correctly, it sounds like the Pistons are not going to formally sign this deal with Drummond, even though you have to wait a week for that. They're going to wait a little longer, if my understanding and what I'm reading is correct. That means because they have Drummond's bird rights, they can go over the cap to sign him,
right,
and they'd rather save what cap space they have in the interim to sign more guys after the Ish Smith deal that they did today. And if they do it that way, then they get the other couple reagents. Then you formally sign Drummond because you can go over the cap for him at that point. So we're talking about playing within the system. This is another example of that. And if that indeed is what the Pistons are going to do, I tip my cap to them, because that's just smart given the system we have.
And it's been in place for about a year now, because what it ultimately, bottom line, under the bottom line, it adds up to about $13 million extra that the Pistons will have to spend this summer. And it went back to, this has been in play for more than a year now, because Drummond last year came up for extension on his rookie contract, and he could have forced the Pistons' hand to sign exactly the same deal that he's going to sign in a couple weeks or whenever it works out. But if he had signed this extension last year before Halloween, instead of waiting to do it after all other business is complete this year, then his entire salary, $21 million plus whatever it works out to be for 2016-17, would have applied to the Pistons' salary cap this summer as they went into free agency. As it was, as he did it, since he delayed it, they only had to apply $8.2 million his cap hold against their cap number going into free agency. It's a huge difference, and it enabled them, and it's exactly why they will sign him last, and you explained it perfectly with the team having his bird rights, that it can usurp the salary cap to retain its own free agent as long as it signs him last. So that's exactly what it's been. It's a machination that's been in place for about 14 or 15 months now, and the Pistons have known this is the way they wanted to do it, and it worked out ideally for them. It took a little bit of a sacrifice of maybe some security for Drummond if he gets a major injury last season. You look back and you say, boy, you should have signed that extension, man. But it did not affect his bottom line one bit. He still made the same amount last year. He'll still make the same amount next year and for the 4 years that follow. that he would have if he had signed the deal last summer as an extension instead of as a new contract, and the Pistons get a lot more money to put a better team around it.
David Mayo is our guest on the Extravaganza this afternoon. We are Toledo sports leader. David is with MLive.com, so we are indeed talking Pistons. Looking at Andre Drummond's first 4 years in this league, and I just ran down his numbers, just at least the most important ones. I said he's not even at his prime yet because he's 22. How good can he get? What is the ceiling for Andre Drummond? He's gone from 13 points to 16 now from last year to this past year. And as I mentioned, the boards have gone from 13.5 to nearly 15. Is this a guy who can ever be a 20-point-a-game scorer consistently while maintaining that 14-15 rebound average, if you will? Or is that asking too much, or maybe better than that? What do you see his best years in front of him being like?
If he were a 50 to 55% free throw shooter, I'd absolutely say yes, because teams would have to play him more honestly. Obviously, he would be making a higher percentage of his free throws. They would not be able to foul him as often, although he would still see a fair number of fouls. And his offensive game is coming along. I don't know if you'll ever get a whole lot more than 15 rebounds a game out of him. There aren't any other 15 rebound guys in the NBA right now.
You don't need any more than that. It's just a wondering about the offensive expansion of scoring.
I think he could I think his offensive game has come along fairly well as it is. It's still a little raw, and with a big guy, it can take 7, 8, 9 years before you get as developed as you're going to get. So there is some room to improve before he hits his ceiling there, I think. But it will come down at the end of the day to whether or not he can improve free throw shooting.
Back at the end of April, Jim and I were talking about this toward the end. Jim, was it toward the end of the Cavaliers and Pistons series in the first round? I think maybe you were talking about, boy, I hope Andre Drummond calls up Rick Barry and learns how to shoot free throws underhand, because he's got to do something. And you didn't realize this, Jim, at the time, and David, you probably did, he said, and Stan Van Gundy said, that he is absolutely, Andre is willing to try anything, and he will learn, not necessarily from Rick Barry, but he will learn from underhand, granny-style free-throw experts if that's what it takes. He is not ignorant of the situation. He is not unwilling to do anything to get better at it so that he can improve for himself and his team. Do you think that's going to happen this offseason? Are you aware of any work toward new free throw styles or changes for Drummond this offseason?
No, I doubt very seriously it happens. I mean, if you shot free throws the same way all your life and you can't make them, I mean, maybe you think, well, the obvious solution is go shoot them a completely different way, but I don't necessarily think that's going to translate into better results. There aren't many people who have done it for a reason, and I don't think it's realistically being considered. I think that they'll do everything they can as far as the thing is, though, that repetition hasn't worked. You know, he can shoot 600 a day. And I mean, I know what I understand. We're not talking about a guy who's shooting 48% here or something. We're talking about a guy who's really in the tank.
So it's gone down the last three years, you can't go.
Yeah, I mean, you can't shoot much worse than 35 if you bounce it off your rump into the basket. So, I mean, I'm sure they are willing to try anything. I just think they probably view that as a last resort. But, I mean, I guess I wouldn't rule it out. I just don't think you'll see it happen this summer.
Yeah, it's 41 to, talking about 2013-14, he was at 40, almost 42%, dropped to 38, now drawn down to 35. It's obviously going in the wrong direction. And Stan Van Gundy said that Andre said he will do anything, and that includes learning how to do that. Everything is on the table. So I don't know what it's going to be, what it's going to look like, but by goodness, I certainly hope it works out for him and for the Pistons, because he's just that important. You can't have a max player. We talked about that before. We can't have a max player being off the floor in crucial situations, because you just don't want him to get fouled intentionally and put your team in a bind. Let's talk about the other news. Let's talk about Ish Smith. This solves the backup point guard dilemma for Stan Van Gundy satisfactorily to you?
Well, I think if you watched, yes, short answer. But I mean, I think if you watch the playoffs, and if you look at some of the numbers of the free agents going off the board today as well, too, I think they got good value. I think they got a guy who, you know, in the playoffs last year, even in the regular season last year, this is a young team that wants to run. The second unit wants to get out. It's just sometimes like they were trying to cart old Steve Blake up the floor, you know, and it just wasn't conducive to the style a young team wants to play, getting up and down. Blake wants to get up and down too, but he just can't will his 35-year-old body to do it anymore. And so he ran into every defensive ambush he could find against Cleveland. But Ish Smith's a really dynamic guy who can break anybody down off the dribble. He can get in the lane. He's a good pick-and-roll point guard. He's played for 7,000 NBA teams and 9,000 coaches, so everybody in the league knows him. And I just think he's a guy who can come in here and be a per 36-minute 16, 15, and 7 assist guy. And now, again, I said per 36 minutes. Understood. And really be an effective tempo-pushing second point guard.
Yeah, he's not incredibly dissimilar to Reggie Jackson, is he, in terms of his style and the way he plays the game and what his strongest assets are?
Well, as far as being a slasher and a guy who tries to break defenses down off the dribble and a pick-and-roll-minded point guard, there are some similarities there. Reggie might be a little bit better shooter, a little bit better finisher in the lane. Ish can't shoot over anybody, but it's almost impossible for anybody to stay between him and the basket anyway on a drive. So he has his own game. I think the two guys that probably fit best for the Pistons realistically among the guys on the market who they were considering would have been DJ Augustine and Ish Smith. Augustine's a better three-point shooter. He's another pick-and-roll-oriented point guard. But I think Ish Smith's just so much more athletic and can push the pace so much more in transition and even in the half court that I actually like him maybe a little bit better, particularly at the value. Augustine got a little over $7 million a year from Milwaukee, plus he got a fourth year. And the Pistons were at 6 a year on Smith.
David Bayo joining us from MLive.com, talking a little NBA free agency Piston style. Bob France with you. Jim Cushlin here as well. Jim, go ahead.
And thinking about all this, David, with Ish Smith now in the fold and what we know is going to happen in how this Andre Drummond max deal is going to get signed, what would be the Pistons' next priority at this point? And give us some names that we might be hearing around here joining the Pistons.
Well, they have to have a power forward. That's still the glaring weakness. They need two big men, but they may decide to save some of this cap space too. It just depends how things go. They could, if they wanted to go for a guy like Ryan Anderson, you know, there's not a lot of news about him right now. There's not a lot of buzz about what he's going to do. And if you can get him at 15 or 16 million a year, maybe he's worth it. I don't think if he's going to run up $20 million plus, you want to get involved with him. But they're looking for a power forward. Al Horford is not realistic now, just financially. They'd have to make, at least it's not realistic to be able to keep this core together. You'd have to trade at least Aaron Baines and either Marcus Morris or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to make it work. I think that's too much breakup to accommodate Al Horford, although he would be a much better defensive guy if you put Horford, Drummond, and KCP on the same starting five. You've got a really tight defense. And if you put Ryan Anderson on it and you move at the starting power forward and you move Tobias Harris to the starting small forward, you have three negative defenders in the starting lineup. So in Anderson, Harris, and Reggie Jackson. So you have to take all those things into account when you're doing this roster structure stuff. What they really need is a big banger power forward, a strong guy who can – When Cleveland ran glove down in the post against Tobias Harris, and Harris couldn't do anything about it, someone who can take care of that. I've heard Thomas Robinson's name bandied about. I think you might see a guy like that, but they also would like to arrange shooting power forward. Teletovich went off the board today, but John Lewis still out there, and I think they might have interest in some of that nature as well.
David, last thing we'll let you run, and we really appreciate your time and your analysis this afternoon for all things Pistons. But if you can't talk NBA free agency without somebody asking you where you think Kevin Durant is going to end up. You think he's going back to Oklahoma City? And if so, is it on a short-term, kind of a two-year player option for the second deal so he has an opportunity to get out after one more? Or would he be going back for a long-term deal?
I'd be shocked at any other outcome, and I'd be shocked if there were any need for the player option, simply because Oklahoma City not only can pay him more by going back on the market in summer of 2017, he does it with a salary cap that's going to balloon by another, whatever the number is, $15 to $18 million. It'll be close to $110 million next year. And he'll be a 10-year vet. So his multipliers start at 35% of the cap next summer, only 30% this summer. I'm sure he can do that math and realize that the difference is going to be tens of millions of dollars over the next few years. So, yeah, I expect him to sign 1 year in Oklahoma City and do this song and dance again next summer, although it won't give a lot of people in Oklahoma City a lot of long-term confidence. I think it's what he wants to do is stay, and I think he's part of that team, part of the fabric of that community now, and let's face it, money talks.
You know, in 99% of the cases, I would agree with what you just said about the money talks, and that's where it's going to be, the most financially sensible for him. But this is a guy who's got a $300 million Nike contract before he even makes a dime from his contract in the NBA. And his statement, again, I don't know why I should trust him any more than any other athlete who says it's not about money to me, but he did say right after they lost to the Warriors in that Western Conference final, that whenever he makes this decision up about this, that it's going to be a basketball decision. He wants to go someplace where he can win a championship. It isn't about where can I make the most money. It doesn't seem like it's that high on his priority list, given the fact that he's already rolling in it. You don't buy that? You think it's still going to be a dollar and cents decision for him?
I would like to think that a player of Kevin Durant's ego, who was within a few plays of winning the West against a team that was within a few plays of winning the championship, would think that he could win the championship right where he is right now. They were awfully close. I mean, if it comes to that, I mean, obviously the only team he can go to is Golden State. I don't know if San Antonio is going to be able to keep it together enough that he could go there and be the difference maker. They might be able to, obviously, if that him, Aldridge, and Kawhi Leonard, that's quite a trio if you can fit them all together.
The one that I thought fit better.
Golden State, I mean, there's really only a couple of places I think he could go.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the one that I thought actually fit better is the Clippers, because he would slide right into a three. Nobody gets displaced there because Blake plays a four. DeAndre Jordan's an all-NBA five. Chris Paul is a pass-first, not shoot-first like Russell Westbrook and so many others. Point guard, he would be automatically the number one scoring option there, and I would, and that's a foursome of all NBA players right there that might be, the new big four as opposed to the big threes we see everywhere.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he leaves Oklahoma City. I'll go back to my original answer. I'm really just, I'll be really surprised if he doesn't take the money, because you know how it is—a guy in the aftermath of a really emotional, difficult series loss. Maybe we take the remarks a little bit too seriously in the heat of moment. I think that when all dust settles, he'll be right back in Oklahoma City next season. But we'll see.
Yeah, and you could be 100% right. In fact, one of the undefeated, that sub website of ESPN.com, by the way, says there's a 90% chance that he's going back, that a source that's close to a source, and you know how that story goes, that he is going back to Oklahoma City on a very short deal to do this all over again and make more money next year. But
and the truth is, a lot of these storylines we're talking about, we could have written this in February. I could have told you last October what was going to happen with Andre Drummond. I mean, these are just the consummations of deals that we believed and concepts we believed to be in place for some time. And, I'd be really surprised if the Durant thing doesn't play out exactly as most people speculate.
Hey, David, this just crossed my screen. Apparently it was 38 minutes ago, but I just saw it. Matthew Dellavedova from the Cavaliers, 4 years, yeah. 38 mil from the Milwaukee Bucks. Just out of curiosity, Timofey Mozgov, who along with Dellavedova played huge roles, both those guys, in their run to the finals a year ago. Both were forgotten men in the finals this year. One of them gets 4 years, 38 mil. The other gets 4 years, 64 mil from the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of those most exemplifies how out of whack the NBA salary system is?
Well, that's a really good question. Both point guards and centers get paid premium money, but I guess I'd have to go with the $16 million a year for Mozgov. Struck me as startlingly high, especially with the current makeup. Obviously, Milwaukee has moves to make. I don't know what's going on with how Milwaukee's going to structure their point guard thing. They already have Antetokounmpo there. I guess they're thinking Dellavedova is back. They have a bunch of point guards there right now, so they have moves to make. I don't know how they're going to structure all that, but I think Mozgov's $16 million a year is a bigger surprise than $9.5 million for Dellavedova.
Yeah, it's just it is just amazing, you know, when you see some of these guys who are running around here with contracts that used to be reserved for star players, and now everybody who can roll, you know, I don't know, bounce the ball off their toe, can cash in at 10, 9, 10, 11, 12 million dollars. It's a crazy thing. I guess I did the wrong thing for a living. I should have practiced more when I was a kid. David, maybe all of us, right? David Mayo, MLive.com, Pistons beat writer, does an outstanding job, and it's always great to chat with you when we have the opportunity to do so, David. So thanks for taking the time this afternoon.
Good being with you, Bob.
All right, we appreciate it. There's David Mayo, MLive.com. We like to bring you as close to the Pistons as we possibly can for all of our Pistons fans. We bring you Cavaliers beat writers from time to time whenever we can on them. And, boy, oh, boy, what a story today. A couple of Cavaliers, now ex-Cavaliers, and the Pistons actually bringing some new blood in.
Well, now, to be fair, on Matthew Dellavedova, they did last night extend the qualifying offer, so he is a restricted free agent. The Cavs do have 3 days to match, but 4 years, $38 million, breaking down to $9.5 million.
No.
Yeah, even some Winhurst, for example, on ESPN, saying the Bucks are not expecting a match. So Dellavedova probably gone off the Cavaliers, as given their financial situation, that's probably too rich for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. You know, they spent, we talked about this yesterday, somewhere in the neighborhood Dan Gilbert did of $175 million on that championship last year between salaries, which was way over there. You know, the actual amount of salaries was, I don't know, some $30 or $40 million over the salary cap, or maybe more than that. excuse me. Then when you add those extra salaries to the luxury tax for adding those extra salaries, it's like $175 million. They're not going to do that over and over and over again. I guarantee you that Dan Gilbert is going to be willing to pay J.R. Smith to come back.
Yes.
It's going to take more than the $5 million they got him for. And that's going to mean, sorry, Matthew, we're not giving you $9.5 million a year. It's just not going to work that way.
And this kind of offer sheet that's out there now for Delly, and again, 3 days, so by the time we hit the holiday coming on Monday for the 4th, we'll know how this ends up shaking out. But this is kind of why you think back to the draft when the Cavs trade in the second round for Kay Felder of Oakland just across the border here in Michigan. Mo Williams picking up his option. I know these guys, specifically defensively, aren't what Delly has been known to be able to bring you, but now having those guys in the fold makes a little more sense if you're going to lose essentially your backup point guard.
Exactly right. I think that's very fair to say. So a couple of priorities. We found out that Matthew Dellavedova and Timofey Mozgov are not. They are not priorities, especially for 9.5 for one and 16 for the other. All right, let's get a timeout here. And as we do so, how about we send you to the Marathon Classic? It's coming up in 10 days from today at the Highland Meadows in Sylvania, as you know, the 11th to the 17th. I've got a 4-pack of tickets for each of the next two callers. No, I shouldn't say next two. Let me say that again. For the 10th and 11th callers, coming up at 866-240-1065, a 4-pack of tickets for each of those two callers, callers 10 and 11. Call 866-240-1065 if you'd like to go to the Classic, where we will be broadcasting live on the Thursday and Friday of that event right here on the Extravaganza. So dial that number now, and good luck to you. Back right after this.
The Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Really, really enjoyed the conversation with David Mayo. We don't get enough opportunities to talk with him. He's one of my favorite beat guys covering the Pistons to talk to from the Detroit media. So really, really appreciate the opportunity to talk with him. Thanks so much for listening, and really great stuff also from Sam Amico earlier. The names just continue to flow in. The contract dollar amounts continue to flow in. We've got, it's like there's, you know, a couple dozen lottery winners today. Everybody won the lottery in the NBA, and the jackpots are just through the roof, unlike anything we've ever seen before. And this is before max dollars get thrown to guys like LeBron James and, you know, and Kevin Durant and others. We're talking about the non-max players cashing in on max contracts.
Which forget a non-max player who won't get a max contract. You mentioned Cavs guys with LeBron. The next one, it would be J.R. Smith. He's not going to get a max contract, but I'm pretty sure he's going to make more than the $5 million he had to sign last year.
Yeah, well, no question. Remember how he butchered that last
yes.
year? I can't remember.
Oh,
he had a $6.4 million offer from the Cavs on the table. If memory serves.
I think it started as an option that he declined
yeah.
to start with so he could put himself in free agency, and he thought he was going to get a ton of offers. His agent did, and the phone went silent. And so he had to actually take a small pay cut to stay with the Cavs, which, of course, as we've been talking all year, all these last 2 years, really, is probably the best fit for him. But I got to believe some of the things he's done, and with the cap blown up and all that stuff, somebody's going to offer him around 10. And quite frankly, if you just consider the trade the Cavs with the Knicks for Smith and Shumpert, right now Smith is much more the valuable player.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. J.R. Smith butchered that. He and his agent butchered, or how do you want to say it? I don't want to keep saying
it. The way
butchered.
I said it last year was they decided to roll the dice and it came up snake eyes.
Okay, that's another way of saying it too, but they miss. Boy, I'm having a hard time with my thesaurus today, my mental thesaurus. Usually I have a very expansive vocabulary. But they didn't evaluate the situation correctly is what I'm trying to say. They misstated or misunderstood his true value, apparently, is what I'm trying to say. But thankfully for him, and I'm really, really glad this worked out the way that it did, because whatever he would have gotten on the free agency market last year would have been somewhere else, and chances are he would not have been a part of the Cavaliers, and he would not have helped them, and he was a big key component in winning the world championship just a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. So I'm glad it was messed up that way for the Cavaliers' sake, but I'm also glad they misunderstood his value because he's going to cash in more now. He's worth more now than he was last year going into the free agency or what would have been free agency, because he's proven that. And a lot of people thought that he was actually proving just the opposite the way he played in the first two games of the finals. The first two games of the Warriors, if you recall, nobody played well. Kyrie didn't play particularly well. LeBron did not play well. Kevin Love did not play well. And J.R. Smith just didn't play. He took 3 shots in the first game. He took 6 shots in the second game. And that's insane. This is a guy who's known as a rifleman. You know, I know that's Chuck Person's old nickname, but he's a rifleman. He's just a chucker, and not in the bad way. He is a high percentage shooter when he is on, obviously, extraordinarily gifted in riding a hot streak. I mean, as far as it can be ridden.
Not to mention he's now played defense in a way that I don't think anybody in the league thought was possible.
That too.
And kept himself out of trouble.
Let me finish the offense first before we get there, because, you know, but the other part of this is when he's in a cold streak, never gun shy and afraid to continue to fire because he knows he's too good to stay in one. It's a gift that not a lot of guys have. And that first two games that we're talking about were just so uncharacteristic, and people thought, dude's just not big game. He's not big time. The way he played in the last 3 games after being down 3-1 proved how big time he is. He was willing. He found his swagger again. He found, you know, those weapons in his holster, and he loaded them up and high capacity, and he let him fire, and he did his thing. And guess what? If it wasn't for him, especially, you know, closing a 7-point gap going into a second half by coming out and scoring 8 straight points and giving the Cavaliers the lead, it's not just total number of shots he took. It's not just total number of points he scored. It's when he took them and when he scored them, and they were clutch and they were crucial. So to me, it's a good thing that he and his agent messed up the option and the free agency going into last year, because now, A, the Cavaliers kept him at a bargain price for them, and they won a championship with him. And now that he has proven his worth, he's going to make more than he would have last year in free agency anyway. So that's a good thing for everybody. It's a win-win-win.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And with that extra year to show everybody else in the NBA, you know, there's also the other two things that dogged him throughout his whole career. You know, he won't play defense because if they're not doing well, he's going to mentally check out. We've seen him do that before in New York and at times in Denver. And then all the off-the-court nonsense that, quite frankly, he's been relatively clean as a whistle since coming over to the Cavs. Those are two things that I think are reasons why people didn't pick up the phone last summer either.
Yeah, I think that's exactly
right. But now that another season under his belt, and now he has a ring, I don't think a lot of teams are going to think that. They might still think that on the defensive effort if we're in 13-15 win team about to sign him. But if you put him in, he's proven that if you put him in the right situation, he'll keep his nose clean and play defense on top of what he can give you offensively.
Exactly. And that defense, you started to bring it up. I just wanted to finish the offensive commentary, but you're exactly right. He has proven to be, you know, the best perimeter defender they have, and one of the best, honestly, you know, that you can find. And I'm not going to say he
should be
first team.
Kind of makes Amon Shumpert redundant in a way.
Yes, it does. You know, he's kind of a luxury. He's a bonus, but you still need that depth, and you still need that, you know, those pieces. And again, what's Shumpert? 4 years, $40 million. Now he's got 3 years left.
Yep.
$10 million a year is suddenly not that much of an overpayment, even for the redundancy, as you put it, of Amon Shumpert.
That's actually the twisted part, that it's okay.
I mean, Deli's getting 9.5
right,
now. Shumpert's getting 10.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And that's kind of why it's okay that a lot of the Cavs' core guys, outside of the LeBron and JR things, and we know LeBron is more of a formality at this point. It's just a matter of which one he ends up signing. I think we know, but we won't officially know for a few more days and such, obviously. But it's kind of why it's nice that some of these other guys are already kind of signed to their various deals. You mentioned Shumpert. Tristan Thompson, goodness, if he was a free agent this year after what he's done the last two playoffs, can you imagine what sometimes teams might be throwing at him? He'd be getting 20, at least, given what Mozgov and such are now setting as a floor.
Well, and some of those other names that we ran through here that play his same position, even.
It's nice. Yeah, at the same time, Love and Kyrie. It's nice to already have them locked up with their dollar amounts, because especially in Kyrie's case, you know, you make him a free agent now or next summer, he should make 8 to 10 more million than he's going to, because both right around 2022.
Well, look, Kyrie Irving has proven to be a max player.
Exactly.
No matter when
exactly
it is, he deserves max dollars.
But his max number is max as of two seasons ago, not the new max. That's the key.
I understand that. But my point is, you know, even if he wasn't maxed out two seasons ago and they had to max him now, they would, and they wouldn't even blink. And it would be fair and it would be right, because guess what? And I know a lot of LeBron James fans don't like to hear this, but he was the co-MVP of the finals. They do not win that finals, no matter how great LeBron James was, without Kyrie Irving doing the things he did to Steph Curry, offensively, defensively, clutch shots, not just the game winner. Kyrie, to me, was the co-MVP of the finals. He's a max guy, period. He's elevated himself from being, you know, maybe the top 6, 7, 8, 9 guys in the NBA at point guard to top 3 guys. To me, there's Curry, and I don't necessarily mean in this order. There's Curry and Westbrook, and there's Kyrie. Those three guys, and then Chris Paul, because he's a different kind of point guard, is in there some way, somehow. He's a more traditional point guard, but that's how good Kyrie has become. Now, having said that, going back to the point of contract dollars, you know, he's a max guy. Tristan Thompson is a guy that I'm glad they locked up for what they did last year.
Regardless of how many headaches it had leading into mid-late October before that got inked.
That's right. And at the end of it all, because remember, there was talk about, oh my God, $82 million for a guy to come off the bench, Tristan Thompson, to get a few offensive rebounds, blah, blah, blah. Again, he has proven his worth to this team, and now that the salary cap has expanded so vastly, and there are so many guys who are not anywhere near Tristan Thompson type of capability and importance to their teams, that he is now, a year ago he was, oh my God, too much money, now he's a bargain. He is a bargain comparatively to other big guys that don't have a ton of offensive game, that don't have a ton of you know, plays called for them. They're just going to be guys that can score when they scrap, when they get offensive boards, when they create their own opportunities. He is a bargain compared to some of these other guys and the numbers that they're getting.
Now now he absolutely is. You know, I know we're running out of time here, Bob, but one thing that crossed my mind, because you mentioned it a few minutes ago when I mentioned the Kyrie and Curry and whatnot for point guards. Yeah, I forget if it was Sam Amico last hour or David Mayo at the top of this one that mentioned it, but they brought up that, and it is true, I looked it up, because of his injury and the way he had to sign his earlier contract, Steph Curry's only making $12 million this year, and by the way, he's a free agent after this season.
Right.
I wonder how that's going to mess with the Warriors if they pull off this Durant thing, because I have to believe that Curry's going to get something like, oh, I don't know, 25, as he probably should,
well,
for his next contract. That's we think the Cavs are in luxury tax hell. The Warriors will join him right there if they bring on Durant, then have to sign next summer.
Well, two things.
Curry,
I don't think
25.
Two things. I don't think they will care. They'll pay it just
Touché.
Like Gilbert does, because they're packing their building every night. They're selling so much merchandise. He's making it faster than he can spend it, even on a Durant and a Curry. Second of all, they would max out Kevin Durant, obviously, and he would be able to make less than he could with Oklahoma City on his max. And they'll max out Curry, and they won't even blink. Look, they maxed out, the Cavaliers maxed out LeBron James, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving, and darn near Tristan Thompson. And guess what? They have a championship.
You're probably right. It's just second. Something that popped in my head when I forget which one of them that reminded me that Curry is only making $12 million. And then I looked it up. Yeah, that's true. And he's a free agent after this year.
There you
just,
go.
I was just throwing that out there.
We know his deal is coming. We know it's only a matter of time. That's why I threw his name all the time in when I talked about max deals. Obviously, he's not on one yet, but he will be very, very shortly. By the way, congratulations to Mark Kidd. Where's Mark from? I don't see Mark's city up here. But congratulations.
Tautogany.
I'm sorry?
Tautogany, Ohio.
Oh, Tautogany. Thank you. I can see it. It's not on my screen. And Greg Grover. I don't see his either. Where's Greg?
Toledo.
He's in Toledo. Okay, congratulations to Mark and Greg. They won the Marathon Classic tickets. We'll have more to give away next week as we get closer to that event at Highland Meadows in Sylvania. All right, thanks very much to you, Jim Cushlin, guests Sam Amico and David Mayo. Thanks to you for listening, being a part of the show. Back live with you again on Tuesday. We do not have a game on Independence Day Monday, so enjoy your holiday weekend. Be safe if you're lighting things on fire and exploding things to celebrate our independence. We'll see you Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.